welcome to what used to be the Trinity Tims. This week you've only got two Tims for your free subscription to YouTube. So last week we actually had four Trinity Tims, so you had a bonus last week. I'm not sure if everyone would interpret it as a bonus. So this week, you're down to myself, Joe McHugh from Video Celt, and Eric Knott from Read Celtic. James will certainly be back next week, but I suspect last week's other guests might not be here for a while. We've improved our vetting procedures, and it might just be me, Eric, James, and one other more carefully selected guest to discuss all things Celtic and future. So, what's happened since last Monday? Well, Celtic went to Red Star Belgrade, got a decent one each draw, a strange game, not much happened in the first half, plenty happened in the second half. We found that Iheanacho a goal scorer, found the team a bit of resolve. Colby Donovan came on tons and tons, and then we had another frustrating afternoon. I think that's four goalless draws so far this season. I was watching, I think it was Hamish on Celtic AM this morning, and I think he said there was three goalless draws in Ange Postecoglou's two seasons at Celtic. So there's lots of stats to be dug up and thrown around just now. Not too many of them are favourable. So we'll get started with our thoughts on Saturday. So it was almost a good performance, but on the back of what we've already had this season, and it's frustrating and it's concerning. It's not just a bad day at the office of these things happen. It's fallen into more of a pattern. The team played reasonably well, created a reasonable amount of chances, but it feels very different from the start of last season when so much was going our way. Everyone was flying, everyone was on top of their game. Again, there's stats about the lack of goals scored this season compared to last season. I think we're in the bottom half goal scorers in the SPFL. Equally, we've not lost a goal, SPFL. Is that right? We lost a goal at Kilmarnock. That's the only goal we've lost in the SPFL. So that's the one. Going, but at home, we don't want to see the play saturated. Loads and loads of possession and a lack of cutting edge. So since it's just the two of us, I better pass over quickly to Eric and get your take on Saturday's not quite a non-event, but disappointment.
Yeah, well, I mean, first and foremost, it wasn't a bad performance. There was a lot of positives that you could take out of it. I thought we played relatively well, just the same issue that we've kind of been having all season, and that is that we're not finishing. When I was watching the game about 30 minutes into it, I got that sneaking suspicion that it was going to be just one of those days again. It seems to be of late that when you get that feeling, that's just the way it pans out. And it did seem to pan out like that on Saturday. The most concerning thing for me was Rodgers' tactical inflexibility. He didn't seem too bothered about changing tactics very quickly over in Belgrade at halftime and dropping Maeda because Maeda wasn't putting in a shift. And he changed things around. He brought on Iheanacho. Iheanacho made the difference, got us a goal. And, you know, had we pushed it a bit harder, we might have got a better result there. But on Saturday, it seemed to be very much back to the status quo of the same approach, the same turgid kind of football, which is not delivering results. And has kind of worried us in the, you know, the outset at this season, at the start of this season. Whatever hope we had of actually winning the game was finished and gone in the 67 minute when Iheanacho went off. And another concerning aspect of that is that we now are in a scenario where we have, Iheanacho is our most credible threat up front. He's now the guy we're looking to score goals for us. And that, you know, it kind of brings you back to the back end of the transfer window. And if we hadn't managed to secure Iheanacho on a free transfer, where would we be now? You know, it's a big concern. It's worrying. And I don't understand. Well, I suppose I do to a degree understand why Rodgers took him off. It was because he wanted to have him, you know, fit and flying for the game against Braga, you know, which is fair enough. But at the same time, he was probably the most likely guy who was going to score for us had he remained on the pitch. And when he went off, you could just see that we lost that bit of an edge up front. And you began to sort of resign yourself to the fact that it was going to be a nil-all draw. I mean, it didn't help that the Hibs players were absolutely firing themselves all over the place, and Hednocks and Don Robertson was just feeding into it all, as he usually does in situations like that. But overall, it's concerning. The most concerning thing is Roger's tactical inflexibility. He just does not seem to change or want to change it. And I mean, when I was looking at the game on Saturday, I kind of said to myself, look, if we kind of pushed a bit more forward in the last 15 minutes or so, we probably could have nicked a goal against Hibs if we were a little bit more adventurous. They definitely didn't look like they were going to score. I mean, they had a couple of breaks early in the game, but they didn't really show any threat up front. So I think we could have gone a bit more risky in the last 10, 15 minutes and tried to get ourselves that goal. We didn't really push very hard for it. In fact, if anything, we eased off and it just didn't look like it was coming. So that's a worrying factor for me. And if I'm looking at the game next weekend against Motherwell, I see them, they've got a similar record to Hibs in the league at the moment. There's a lot of draws. I think they have 5 draws under their belt. So you could see them setting up a similar way to Hibs. They could look at the kind of blueprint to what Hibs did and say to themselves, look, we can go there and get a point. Be a good result for us. Anybody thinks that going to Celtic Park and getting a draw out of us is a good result. And you'd be worried if that's the way they approach the game. Would we be helling, you know, would we be looking for another nil-all draw or looking at another nil-all draw? And that's what we need to avoid, because we have a situation where Hearts were playing Hibs the day before. You would think, based on Hearts' form at the moment, that they will edge that one. I doubt that Hibs will set up the way they did against us anyway, that's for sure, because I don't think their fans would appreciate that very much if they went to Tynecastle and set up like that and played negatively like they did against us. Their fans would expect them to try and go for a result or at least try and get something out of the game. So it's hard to know what way that would pan out, but I think that Hearts will have the edge there, and I think they'll have bagged another win by the time we play on Sunday. So Rodgers needs to bear that in mind. He needs to sort of say to himself, we have to do something to change it up. We have to, if the likelihood is that Motherwell set up like Hibs did, we could be looking at another nil-all draw. That'd be my concern, that we'd be looking at another similar result like that, or a one-all draw or something along those lines. And that means then we finish out the weekend next weekend 4 points behind Hearts. And then you start saying to yourself, are Hearts now a credible threat? And I was thinking to myself, like, Hearts are going to be made a credible threat by us unless we start becoming more clinical up front. And we start tweaking, and Roger starts tweaking his tactics. Because if he doesn't tweak his tactics and we approach the game against Motherwell next Sunday in the similar fashion, you know, the way we approach the Hibs game, we could be in trouble and we could be looking at another draw. And I think that we're the ones who are going to make Hearts a credible threat in this title race if we don't start getting more clinical in our finishing and approaching the game in a slightly different way. I don't know how Rodgers is going to do that. Maybe it feeds into the fact that he feels he doesn't have the players that he needs to do it. But at the same time, I don't imagine that I'm sure there's other options for him and other tweaks to make that he can make us a bit more effective up front. So, yeah, I'd be concerned going into next weekend that we're going to see more of the same. The thing with us is if we score early, then it's a different, it's a completely different complexion on the game. So, yeah, I would hope that when we play against Motherwell next Sunday that we score early and then we kind of push on from there. So, yeah, that's the concern out of what I saw on Saturday.
A few comments about Don Robertson. Don't worry, we'll be getting to Dirty Don soon enough. But I think whether it's tactics or formation, whether there's a distinction between the two of them, do you feel it's time to ditch the idea of 4-3-3 because quite clearly, we don't have a competent enough right winger? We've had Yang, Forrest, Negren and Maeda all playing out there. Forrest is only natural right winger as far as I'm concerned, and he's good for 25 to 30 minutes most games. He's not going to be a starter week after week. So I really think James had a good piece on it either yesterday or today. Rodgers needs to make changes. He's got the broad support of most of the fans. They're all sympathetic to what's happened to him. We all know he's been sabotaged. We all know he's working with a chief executive that would rather sell players than buy players. And we know the motivations for that. But now that the window's closed, the points have been made, the coward inside Celtic Park is still inside Celtic Park watching games, or maybe the coward's not been watching games recently or not attending games recently. But I think it's time to ditch the 4-3-3. We don't have a right winger. We're overloaded with left wing options, and I would be playing 4-4-2. I would drop Tonekte back a little bit to make a four-man midfield. And if Maeda and Iheanacho are playing through the middle, we've got a bit more punch and variation. And if Johnny Kennedy is coming off the bench, that's another option. But Rodgers has made his point. He's got great support from most fans. We know what he's up against, but he's got to adapt a little bit as well. He's been dealt a terrible hand with the squad. It's badly imbalanced, and now it's time for him to manage. Ideally, we'd like 4-3-3. Ideally, he'd like two great wingers to come on after 60 minutes. That's not available to him. So here and now, we've got six midfielders. Use them a bit more. Tonekte looks decent on the left, but I switched to two up front. It might not be too trendy. It might be more direct than he would like, but it's a way of changing things around. SPFL managers seem to have, they've got a good idea in advance what they're going to face from Celtic. If it's switched to 4-4-2 and you've got two players through the middle, then I think we've got a far greater goal threat. Which is that along your line of thought, Eric?
Yeah, I mean, I would be kind of thinking along the lines of playing both Iheanacho and Maeda up front, because they are clearly our most credible goal threats at the moment. So to push, you know, we know that Maeda proved himself through the middle last season. So if we had two strikers playing through the middle, they could feed off each other, especially with Iheanacho's holding play. He's very good at holding the ball up. So I think if he was up front with, you sort of kind of think back to the way Chris Sutton used to hold the ball up for Henrik Larsson. You know what I mean? When back in those days. And I know that it was a 3-5-2 that Martin O'Neill used to play. It was slightly different, but he still had two up front. So, yeah, I think we could be more effective. But then again, it boils down to, is Rodgers willing to make a change like that? Because he seems so rigid in his 4-3-3 setup. And that's the concern. I mean, the way I was looking at it at the game on Saturday is you, and we kind of said this at the outset today, you look at that game and you know within 30 minutes the way the game is going to go. And if we're just fans, we're guys who observe the game as fans. And I mean, if we can see it, how come the manager isn't seeing it? How come he isn't seeing that this level of tactical inflexibility is causing us problems? Because this, what we saw on Saturday is not, this isn't something that just happened out of the blue. It's something that tends to happen on a regular basis of late. So, and it even goes back to the cup final last season. You know, it was a similar situation in that game as well, because he was inflexible in that game. He would not change things up. It was just like for like substitutions. He was approached the game in the same manner throughout. And that's worrying, because he has shown in the past that he is a manager who can change things up. We all used to talk about him in his previous stint, where he was a genius sometimes in the way that he used to change things up. He always had a plan B. He always had a different approach if things weren't going his way. And that seems to be gone, and I can't understand that. It's a hard one to figure, you know? So, yeah, without a doubt, Joe, I definitely think the 4-4-2 would be more effective. But again, that's an observation by us fans. And we don't know what's going on inside in Brendan Rodgers' head, so how do we, you know, is he thinking that way? And you just don't know. So I guess we're going to find out. We'll see how we approach the Braga game. That'll be a forerunner before the Motherwell game. It'll give us an impression, you know, of what he plans on doing. But yeah, I definitely think a change of formation is the only way that things are going to start to open up for us now. That would be my opinion. And could you employ a 3-5-2 like Martin O'Neill used to and use the two wingers? I know we don't have a really effective winger on the right and have three holding midfielders. It's probably not likely that we could do that. The 4-4-2 is probably more realistic. But like I said, it all depends on whether or not he's going to be flexible and change things up, you know?
Yeah, 4-4-2 seems less drastic. And the transfer window's closed. All the points have been scored. We know who's a good guy. We know who's a bad guy. For now, through until the 1st of January, it's on Rodgers to deliver results with what he's got. And he needs to be a bit more pragmatic, accept what he's got and make the best of it. But I saw a comment from Big Dom, and that was talking about how disillusioned Brendan is. Yet it's something that can never, ever be overlooked, what's going on inside the club. So Rodgers is without doubt in the final 8 months of his time as manager of Celtic. So he's got to do his best to deliver a title, hand the title over at the end of this season, and then those people, those decision makers, whoever it might be, can show their genius and show that they've got something better up their sleeve than Brendan Rodgers. We all doubt it very much. And if it's the Neil Lennon, Sean Maloney, Mark Wilson dream team, good luck with that. But one issue that was very evident, or maybe not so evident, on Saturday was the 12-minute silence from the Celtic Fans Collective. So it seemed a good idea ahead of the match. They did fantastically. It was very visual, lots of impact, the card protests at the Partick Thistle game. But I'm afraid that the 12-minute silence just didn't quite work. And I don't think a 12-minute silence, a 29-minute silence and a 32-minute silence is going to do much favours. As I say, it was very visual and successful, the protests at the Partick Thistle match. It was perfect when Nicholson and Mackay were looking at their phones as Premier Sports had the cameras on them. Celtic TV had no coverage whatsoever of the director's box on Saturday, but we can guess what they were like. So I don't think it's too late to call it off for the Braga match. It'll not make a huge difference. It will make some sort of difference, but I think it'd be wise of the collective to acknowledge that at Kilmarnock, the 12-minute delay going into the match worked very well. It made an impact. It was the first ever action taken by the Celtic Fans Collective at very short notice. There's a meeting on the Wednesday night, and that game was on the Sunday afternoon, and he made an impact. Every media outlet had to cover it. As I said, at Fir Hill, that stand was perfect. It was a sunny day, 5,500 Celtic supporters holding cards. But I suspect that there's not much impact, and it might have a bit of an impact among the support. I think there's opinions are divided. Do you think they should go ahead with the silence for the Braga and Motherwell matches, Eric?
I mean, if you were asking me before Saturday's game, I was kind of the opinion that, yeah, look, we should try different approaches. I thought at first, yeah, the 12-minute silence wasn't a bad idea. But then when I saw the other two silences, I was thinking maybe that's a bit extreme, because there are a lot of people out there who want to support the team and who want to vocalize their support for the team. And you know, okay, 12 minutes is understandable, signifying the 12th man and so on and so forth with that. But going to the extent that they're going to go on the Braga game and the Motherwell game, I don't know if it's going to have a more negative than a positive impact. I understand that the collective and the groups behind this and who are organizing this, and I mean, I'm involved in it as fan media as well, like, you know, so I know what's happening, and we've all got a good idea of what's going on. But for me, I'm in two minds about that particular protest. I know we have to try different things. I'm just not sure how that affects hurts our board. And as you've said, Joe, the visual impact of Fir Hill was by far the best thing that we've done so far. It was very, very impactful. It had a serious impact, and it had very much the desired effect, because we saw the reaction from the director's box at Fir Hill. The other thing you'd say is that whenever a match is on Celtic TV, nothing is going to be seen from, like, I'm over in Ireland, obviously I can't be at games. So I'm dependent on what's going on the television. And I was able to see that. Obviously, Sky Sports are going to milk that. They're going to home in it straight away if they're showing games. You know, so whenever you're watching a game on Sky, you're probably going to get to see the full impact of whatever protest is on. Now, it's a different story on Wednesday night, obviously, or on Thursday night, should I say, against Braga. It's going to be a different television company that's in there, and the cameras will be probably panned around the stadium, and we're going to see probably a lot of what's going on. But what impact does the silence have? I mean, I saw Luke McCullough's interview in the paper there today, and he was saying that, like, it doesn't really impact us. We know what we have to do on the field of play, which is understandable. You know, the guys have a game plan. They approach the game with their game plan. And he said, you know, his exact words were, whatever the fans do is on them. So, as I said at the start, all on for the 12 minutes, because it kind of linked in with the 12-minute protest at Kilmarnock in a way, like, you know. But then to extend it again from Motherwell. And I saw there's a lot of mixed feelings about it, and there has been a lot of mixed feelings about it since. So if you're to ask me, it's probably too late in the day for them to change the whole approach, and that we are probably going to see these silences in the next two games. I would say that when we go beyond that, we need to change it up a lot. It needs to be a hell of a lot more impactful, and it needs to impact on the board. Let's call it as it is. I don't think the board give a shit about silences. That's not going to bother them. It's not going to hurt them. So we got to figure out something else. And this, as we know, was never going to be easy. It was never, ever going to be easy. And my worry is that this particular protest that's going on at the moment is going to dishearten people a bit, and we're going to lose momentum. And that's probably one of my main concerns, that we'll lose a slight bit of momentum here. And that's what we don't want. We don't want a scenario where we do lose momentum. We want to keep this up, and we want to intensify the pressure rather than lose momentum. So, yeah, that's my take on it. First time, yes, 12 minutes, absolutely. But after that, I think it is a slight bit extreme, and I don't know if it's going to have the desired effect.
Yeah, it was individual acts at Kilmarnock, at Partick Thistle, and the Hibs game. So that's three matches. They've taken some action. I think they should assess it, and for the betterment of everyone, just say, well, it never quite had the impact. We've learned our lessons, and get behind the team as normal for the Braga and the Motherwell matches. It's very, very difficult for them. They've made great strides, made incredible progress, basically over the course of 1 month. They're not going to get everything right, so it's not as if it's a slap in the face if they say, we've taken on board feedback from Saturday's actions against Hibs, and we've dropped it, but it's only those actions, it's only the silences against Braga and Mullow that are getting dropped. The campaign certainly isn't getting dropped, and there's so much other things you can be doing. I mean, Celtic made an awful lot of match day income. I was thinking about how much there's available there. I mean, there's a Kerrydale suite, there's a sports bar, there's the bookmakers inside the stadium, as well as the food outlets, etc., etc. So I think there'd be broad sympathy and broad support if they were to say, here's five or six ways that you can reduce the income the club's getting. And it's up. The club would take that for granted. Over the next couple of weeks, we're going to find out the salaries of the directors. I suspect Michael Nicholson's picked up £1 million for last year, possibly more. And those sort of things can be rallying points for them. So it's no slap in the face. It's no about turn. It's not a political U-turn. They're fresh. They're up and running. They've done fantastically. They've got over 400 groups on board. But the impact on Saturday was nothing like the impact at Fir Hill. And to continue with that, then I see somebody suggesting no hot dogs. Actually, you can buy hot dogs outside Celtic Park. It's not exclusive to Celtic Park. At the Ford's retail park, you'll find Greggs and other retailers. You might find McDonald's, KFC and others very close to Celtic Park. And you'll probably get a little bit better value for money than you will from a Celtic sausage roll or a Celtic hot dog. So each to their own. No one's telling anyone else exactly what to do. Suggestions getting made. And if you don't want to do it, if you can't live without your Celtic hot dog or sausage roll, wire in, get two or three to make up for some others. But I suppose it's time to move on to Don Robertson. Anyone that's followed Don Robertson will know the type of performance that he puts in. There's reasons why he's moved up the ladder at the SFA. I was thinking the first time I noticed him, but the first time he really came to prominence was February 2017. Ryan Bowman of Motherwell put in a ridiculous challenge above Kieran Tierney's knee, and after it, after Brendan Rodgers compared it to John Kennedy, and John Kennedy was finished by a similar challenge. A few weeks later, up at Ross County, Alex Schalk took a ridiculous dive. There's about a yard between him and Eric Sviatchenko. Don Robertson pointed to the spot, and Don Robertson's been on the up and up ever since then. There's other examples. I mind in Ange Postecoglou's first season, there was a horrific challenge by Callum Butcher of Dundee United on David Turnbull. That was a yellow card, and then it was upgraded to a red. About a month later, it was Alloa against Celtic in the Scottish Cup. Barry Ferguson and Bob Malcolm's boot boys kicked everything that moved. Try to remember their Japanese player.
Start and finish of Iniguchi's career.
Iniguchi, that's the name. Yep.
Yeah.
So that was his first start. He put out the game for about 6 weeks and never recovered. He might not have recovered anyway, but he wasn't given the chance, etc., etc. Robertson allows other teams to put the boot into Celtic. They know they can do almost anything they like, and it's not going to come with any punishment. But on Saturday, he just completely overstepped the mark. There's ways to mask things, and a couple of token free kicks against Hibs wouldn't have brought the issue to attention. And I have to say, again, it's only fan media that's brought this up. There's nothing on BBC, Radio Clyde, Sky Sports, anywhere else. Nothing in the Record, nothing in the Sun, nothing in the Evening Times, etc. about Don Robertson and the free kick count. So he went too far on Saturday. We know the tactics our teams employ. They can fall and get free kicks on demand. Hibs mastered that. I would be amazed if it wasn't mentioned by David Gray. The players will have a good idea going to Celtic Park. Waste time, spoil it as much as you can. But how did it seem to you, Eric, watching that match? The way no major decisions, no red cards, no penalties. The disallowed goal was probably correctly disallowed, although I'm not too sure of the lines that were given. But I'll accept that Iheanacho was offside. But nobody at Celtic can accept that level of refereeing from Don Robertson. So what was your impression?
I mean, it's very similar to yourself, Joe. I suppose that you look at it from the perspective of we are the team that has most possession. Okay, we're the team that's pushing forward all the time. We're the team who's, as I said, constantly on the attack. Yet we have committed 16 fouls, and they've committed one. And that just doesn't. If you're looking at any other game statistically that has two sides playing, where one side has predominantly most of the possession, you're not going to see that kind of foul count in a game like that. The team that's on the attack all the time is not the team who's going to be fouling more than the team that... It's the team that's coming at you, trying to get possession from you, that's going to foul you more. So you can see, like, what Don Robertson does is very subtle. It's disruption tactics. That's what it is. It's all about allowing the opposition to time waste, and it's all about allowing them to disrupt. He's giving them the freedom to disrupt our play. And it does feed into, because you could see it in the last 10 minutes of the game, players were getting seriously frustrated with it. They were, and like guys are saying here, we're blaming the ref. We're not blaming the ref. We're not blaming the ref, but you have to look at it from a balanced perspective. Like, and that particular foul count just doesn't add up when you're the attacking team. And the amount of head injuries, as we saw that Hibs supposedly had, how many of those were feigned head injuries? How many of those were actually real and weren't used to waste time? So, look, we have to be honest about it. Hibs came with a game plan. They knew... I mean, are you telling me honestly that there's no manager out there in the Scottish Premiership who doesn't know what kind of form referees have? Are you telling me that when the Hibs manager knew that it was going to be Don Robertson, that he didn't know, you know, that he didn't know what kind of tactics he was going to employ, or what kind of game disruption tactic he was going to deploy, knowing that it was Don Robertson, and Don Robertson has the exact kind of form that you brought up there, Joe, with all the fouls back to right, that foul against Kieran Tierney, you know, against when we were playing Motherwell, how many years ago is that now? About 8 years ago. So, like, he has form. So, regardless of whether you want to say, we're not blaming the ref for our performance. What we know for a fact our performance revolves around the fact that we're not very penetrative up front. But there's no two ways about it that Hibs went there with a game plan to disrupt the flow of play and to upset our momentum. And the referee played into that exactly as they wanted him to. And that's the thing, like you said, there wasn't a whole pile to look at in the game, but you could see the disruption tactic from both Robertson and Hibs. They worked hand in hand. And that's very much the way Robertson operates as a ref. He's almost under the radar in the way he operates, but you can see that the fouls are just kneely fouls. And when a Celtic player gets within the vicinity of a Hibs player and he barely touches off him and they just roll over, he's just given the foul every time. And that's why you have a foul count of 16-1 in a game like that. How can Hibs have only one foul in the whole game? You know, when they're the team trying to get possession off us, what was it? We 68% possession in the game or something?
77.
Sorry, yeah. We had 77% possession in the game, and they only fouled us once. So, for anybody out there saying that, you know, you're mad trying to blame the ref. We're not trying to blame the ref. We're just pointing out a fact here that you don't. You just like go to La Liga, right? And go look at a game where Barcelona play or Real Madrid and they have 60-70% possession and look at the foul count in a game like that. And it will not compare. Because it'll be very much, the foul count will be very much in the team who has the low possession. It'll be in their half, the higher foul count. Because they're trying to regain possession from the team that's on the attack all the time. It's pure Don Robertson. That's the way he operates. And he's very good at it. He's actually become very good at it. He's not a good referee, but he's very good at disrupting the shit out of a game. You know?
He knows how to climb the SFA ladder. So just for some of the goody-goody Celtic fans that have been putting comments in, don't blame the referee, it's a crap performance. Whether your team plays good, bad or indifferent, you're entitled to have the laws of the game applied exactly the same. That did not happen on Saturday. No one can make any case for one team with 77% possession committing 16 fouls and one team with 22-23% possession. I think it was 77.8 to be correct on it. So it does not add up. Celtic had multiple failings. We've discussed it. There's a lack of a right winger. There's lack of variety in play. The substitutions weren't great. But it can also apply that Don Robertson had a very unique interpretation of the laws of the game, and it's not on. It should be getting highlighted. It should be getting pointed out. It's left to fan media. Absolutely nothing from Celtic. And those reporters that were at the match, they would have... you've got a point, Eric? Have you got a special guest coming in?
Just there at Barcelona playing Real Sociedad at the weekend. Barcelona had 91% possession. Or sorry, not 91, 75% possession, similar to us. And Real Sociedad had 25% possession. Real Sociedad committed 12 fouls. Barcelona committed 6.
Yeah.
And that's what I'm talking about. That's a balanced reflection of how a game with that kind of possession stats should play out.
Yeah. On our match, the foul count could easily have been 15 fouls against Celtic, 5 against Hibs, and it wouldn't be so noticeable. But Robertson overstepped it, and 16-1... There is no possible excuse for it, no explanation for it. That's a referee that's out to manage the match and out to influence it towards the desired outcome. So we'll leave it at that. On Thursday night, we've got round 2 of the Europa League. Braga in trouble at home. I've seen a few folk talking about the Red Star Belgrade match. And he was talking as if it was a potential Champions League game. It's not, absolutely not. Red Star failed and Celtic failed. There's a reason for the Europa League, and it's for teams that fail in the Champions League. We've heard it at Ibrox a few times about all these fantastic groups that they get and opponents they get in the Europa League. You're in the Europa League if you're not good enough for the Champions League. So it's looking like a pretty miserable match on Thursday night. Both teams have gone into it with a nothing each. To be fair, Braga got their Europa League campaign off to a decent start, a 1-0 home win against Feyenoord. I think most teams would accept that. That's a decent start. We also got a decent start. We got a point away and we've got two home games coming up. But two home games doesn't translate into 6 points. If we have to get 6 points, we need to be playing very well. And again, Braga will be a good few levels above Hibs. Kilmarnock, Partick Thistle, and anyone else that we're playing domestically. So we'll need to be in form. We'll need to raise our game. I don't think there's any real form you can take into it. It could go any way, and we'll see. Eric, do you have any real insight into how this game on Thursday is going to go? It's very, very difficult to read.
Well, it is. It's difficult to read, but what I would say is that I think Braga will come and they'll be a bit more open-minded than Hibs anyway. You know, I definitely think they'll come to have a go at us. And Brendan Rodgers' tactics, if you're going to be playing at home against a team who's going to have a go at you, you'll be able to pick them off, or you should be able to pick them off. Now, last season when we saw when teams came to Celtic Park and we played, you know, it was open, expansive football played, we saw how Leipzig played against us, and we picked them off. You know, that was kind of end-to-end football. And it's quite obvious that a lot of the time the Brendan Rodgers' tactics work a lot better in games where teams come at you, you know, and where it's more, the play is more balanced. His tactics work better. The 4-3-3 works better. But the problem is, and what we discussed earlier on, is with the 4-3-3, we don't have a really good right-sided, you know, winger. And we're dependent on a right-sided winger who's 34 years of age, being the best of the lot. It's hard to know what Braga are going to bring. I mean, I've seen, yes, I was reading in the papers today, obviously, that the manager's under pressure and they were throwing, was it white scarves or white socks or something at him?
Handkerchiefs,
right, okay. Yeah, so he's obviously getting a vote of no confidence. He's in a bit of, he's a bit in Russell Martin territory over there, you know. So, and again, when he comes to Celtic Park, obviously he's going to feel he has to prove a point, and or he's got a point to prove. So, but as games go, I don't really know. I can't put a finger on how that one is going to pan out. I would be somewhere confident that we should get a win out of it, but it's not going to be a massive win. It'll be a 2-0 or a 2-1 or something along those lines, because we have to be honest about it. We're not banging the goals in, so I don't see us scoring a ton of goals in a game, you know. But I often wonder as well, if the floodgates, you know, if they opened earlier, if we scored early, would we go on and score a few, you know? So, yeah, it's a hard one to call. I don't know how it's going to pan out, but I wouldn't be supremely confident, but I'd be confident we should get a result and we should get a tight win out of it. And if Iheanacho has another good game, he seems to be adapting pretty well to playing for Celtic. And like I said earlier on, I mean, if we hadn't secured that guy at the back end of the transfer window, we'd be in serious trouble now. So he's now our most credible goal threat. And he is showing, because we discussed this at the back end of the transfer window, when we're getting these players late, they have to bed in very, you know, they've had no preseason. They have to have time to bed in, and they have to be given a chance to fit into the way that the team plays. Iheanacho has shown great signs very early on, and we're only seeing the early signs of what he can do as a player. And I was pessimistic about his him coming to us. I even said, was he a Yusuf Malumbo signing in the transfer window? But he's proving that he's a good acquisition. He should definitely have had his third goal of the season on Saturday. So and I'm sure he'd be regretting that, and he'll want to make up for that on Thursday night. So I think he's the man we're going to need to look to make the breakthrough, I'd say, on Thursday night. But for me, 2-0, 2-1, I'd say, but I think we'll get the win out of it.
What was your overall impression of the Red Star game? That was with 3 seasons of playing in the Champions League. The first under Ange was a bit novel and exciting. The second under Brendan Rodgers was pretty flat. And then last season we had as good a Champions League campaign as we've had in a long, long time. We had 10 competitive... Well, the Dortmund game wasn't too competitive, but we had 9 high-quality competitive matches. I felt last week there's a real feel about the Europa League. I don't even know if it is second choice, but there's a massive drop-off. I was reminded of watching the Man United against Spurs final last season. That was a horrific game of football. It was nowhere near. I would say almost all of the Champions League matches I watched, group stage matches last season that I watched, were of a far higher standard than Man United and Spurs. It's all about who wins in the day, but the Europa League just has a second-rate, dreary feel about it, and I think that's going to be worse this week because you get Champions League Tuesday, Champions League Wednesday, two double doses, and then here we come Thursday, and as a reminder, our game kicks off at 5:45 on Thursday. So was there any excitement? Was there any novelty? Was there any ambitions that you could take from watching Celtic back in the Europa League?
No. Being brutally honest, no, because I was very concerned in the first half in that game. We lived on the edge and we were very lucky that we didn't concede at least two goals in the first half of that game. And a lot of it was down to silly mistakes, poor passes. I mean, I did my synopsis on the game afterwards. I wrote an article on it and I said Rio Hatate was absolutely shocking. He was just, his balls were loose, his touch was loose, everything about it. He was totally, he just wasn't at it. And then to compound that, neither was Dyson Maeda. He was one of the poorest performances I've ever seen from Maeda in a Celtic shirt. And that concerned me. So we lived dangerously in that first half. And it was again, and I'll go back to that, it was the change that was made at halftime, bringing Iheanacho on, which made the difference and made us more potent. And we got our just rewards. We got that first goal through him. But you could see his immediate impact. As soon as he was on, he was threatening the Red Star goal. And the Red Star goalie, their keeper, was very good. I mean, he made a couple of very good saves against Iheanacho. Iheanacho, if he'd have been a bit more clinical, he could have had a hat-trick. That's the thing. So if you're asking me, it was a game of two halves. It was very much a game of two halves. It changed. The complexion of it changed completely in the second half when we brought Iheanacho on. Removing Maeda at halftime, I don't understand why he kept Hatate on, because Hatate was so poor up until the 67th minute, I think he was on. 66th, I think he was taken off, and Ingles came on. And as soon as Ingles came on, that wasn't long after Red Star had scored. And we were a bit on the ropes after Red Star had scored. And as soon as Ingles came on, he kind of shored it up in midfield, and we actually went back to being fairly compact and solid. And we held out for the draw in the end. Whereas I reckon had Hatate still been on the pitch or retained for any longer than he was, we would have been in trouble and we would have probably conceded another goal, because he's just, to me, he was non-existent. He just wasn't present in the game. And I did an article after that where I put a poll at the end of it saying, would Celtic fans really miss Rio Hatate and Dyson Maeda on current form? And 75% of fans voted that they wouldn't. So that tells you what the feeling is about those two players at the moment. Fantastic servants to the club and have been great up to this point, but is the heart in it anymore? That's the big question. And I would be again concerned against Braga on Thursday night if we're starting with Hatate. And I get the feeling that Rodgers will, because he believes he has that one major, you know, defense splitting pass in him, or that one moment of magic. But that just wasn't there against Red Star. Will it be there on Thursday night if he comes on? And will he react to it if it isn't? You know, that's the question.
I agree with what you said about Maeda and Hatate, but I reckon it could be applied to virtually everyone. The only player that's been in any sort of form this calendar year was Maeda, February, March, and into April. The switch-off has been alarming. I was talking to someone at the Kilmarnock match who's asking my thoughts on Tierney, and I don't think anyone can go into the Celtic team this minute and light it up and look impressive. It's just that there's so much going on around the club. Those players will know, they'll know a hell of a lot more than we do. Their agents will know the situation with Brendan Rodgers, and they'll either be preparing for a new manager for next season or going to a new club next season. So it's not nicer. I mean, the players, as Rodgers says, Celtic pay your wages and they're getting paid good wages, but the feeling that was around the club this time last year, as they started the season well, belatedly got some decent transfer business done, and then I think exactly this time last year we were between the 5-1 Slovan Bratislava, beating Falkirk with a bit of a struggle, and then going to St Johnstone. The St Johnstone's a bit of a forgotten match last season, but it was fantastic stuff. I'm not reading too much into it, saying St Johnstone's a benchmark, but Celtic played fantastically well. And there's your comparison. We won 6-0 at end of September, beginning of October at St Johnstone. And then we went back there in March, we lost the game. So just everything's switching off. And I've no idea what the solution is. Have you an idea? Is there any
way I'm
just
looking at the comments there from the commenters, and one of the bigger things that's standing out to me there is like John Scales or Liam Scales. I always say John Scales because of the player that played for Wimbledon and Liverpool, but Liam Scales, he's stuck in my head. Liam Scales, he's our best player this season.
Absolutely.
And you can't argue that fact. And when Liam Scales is head and shoulders the best player playing for Celtic, that tells you where we're at now. And that's the concerning thing. And look, that's no disrespect to Liam Scales. He has been great this season. And defensively, we don't have a problem. That's the reality. We don't have a problem defensively. We've a very, very strong defence at the moment. We're not conceding goals. And as you pointed out at the start of the pod, we only conceded one goal in the Scottish Premiership all season. So that tells you how good our defence is. We don't have a problem in defence. And I'm going to address what the commenters have been saying as well. Talk about Callum McGregor. Callum McGregor is not, you know, he's not himself this season. He's not. He's very, very much afraid of playing the forward balls at the moment. He seems to go for the safe option all the time and play the ball back. It's consistently playing the ball back. He very rarely plays it forward, and that's. I mean, Callum McGregor is like. Let's just say, for argument's sake, I know it's a while back, but if you picture Callum McGregor in his pomp in the game against when he was wearing the mask in the game against Rangers when we beat them 3-0 at Celtic Park, that was the best we saw of Callum McGregor, like a little terrier, you know, literally getting stuck in, paying the ball forward, positive, energetic, forward play all the time. And that seems to be gone. You know, it just, I don't know why it's gone out of him. Is it his age? Is it his, you know, that he just doesn't have it in his legs anymore at the age he's at? But he was always a good player to pass the ball forward. So I just, and everybody is pointing it out like that. He is passing back an awful lot. He's taking the safe option an awful lot. And when you have that, when you take that out of a game, when you had a much more attack-minded Callum McGregor and you flip that to the Callum McGregor that you have right now, who's a defense, he's playing defensively all the time, that is having an impact. I'm not saying it's a major aspect of the problem. And when you said to me, what would I do to change it? It goes back to what you said earlier on, I changed the formation. I feel that that's the best move. That's the most positive move that can be made right now. We've nothing to lose by changing the formation. We need to do something radical now, because if we don't, I think, you know, mid to front is a problem. And I think if we change the formation, we might be able to get that to gel somewhat better. But it's not gelling at the moment. And that's the problem. We don't have a problem defensively. We have a problem in midfield because we're a lot less attack-minded, and Rio Hatate is not. He's a shadow of the player that he was. And you're not getting those precision forward passes from him, those laser-like passes that he can do. He just doesn't seem interested. So Rodgers needs to rethink how he's going to set up his midfield, and he does definitely need to rethink the formation. So that's the change I think needs to be made. But like we said earlier, is the manager going to do that?
It's interesting. I mean, there are things that Rodgers should be doing, but if we did this podcast on the go a year ago and we just went through Callum McGregor, Deyzin Maeda and Rio Hatate and explaining how they're miles off it, there is something badly wrong inside the club. I reckon that comes down to the fact that the manager's leaving, the chief executive is fanatical when it comes to selling players. He sold three of the main goal sources over the last two transfer windows, and only his own incompetence prevented Yang and Maeda from getting their moves. And Yang and Maeda started last week away to Red Star Belgrade. Someone got in touch with me saying that Yang's taking on the sort of near beat-on central defensive role in Champions League qualifiers. He's just there because there's no one else. It's not to do with his form. It's not to do with the fact that he's got a track record of having an impact. He's the only guy available. And it's a bad state of play. It's not healthy. And This is where you could do with leadership. This is where you could do with having a CEO that could call Brendan Rodgers and a couple of other folk together and say, right, guys, what the hell is going on? Why is everything at the club on a downturn? Why are we failing to create goals? Why are we failing this, that, and the next thing? What is the problem? But Michael Nicholson's the last guy that's going to apply that. So it's difficult to see what direction this is. Oh, the direction seems fairly obvious. The direction is downhill, and it's just a case of trying to stay ahead of the pack in Scotland while that's happening. One other issue, and it was made very prominent a couple of weeks ago by Brendan Rodgers. Someone cowardly inside the club was speaking to a friend of Roger Hanna, and those thoughts appeared in the Sun. Typical of Michael Nicholson, no action has been taken, no comments been made about that. The Sun are very welcome media partners of Celtic. They were at the game against Hibs. They'd access to the media conference with Brendan Rodgers, Callum McGregor, and also Luke McCowan. So, Eric, do you see anyone going in with a dose of salts and saying, for God's sake, lads, get this sorted out? Or is it just a case of fumbling along, hoping for the best, and maybe get a tongue out of X, Y, or Z that will keep results on the go?
Nothing's going to change at board level. Nobody's going to come in and rattle heads, because if it hasn't been done by now, it's never going to be done. Dermot Desmond is at the Ryder Cup with his hacked skewways and, you know, and looking like he doesn't give a shit. So, I mean, Celtic is the least of his worries. I'm sure he had a great day yesterday when Europe won the Ryder Cup, and he was delighted with that. But that seems, and then protesting about the conditions of a golf club down in the UK. They seem to be the most of his concerns. Certainly not the football club that he's supposed to be, you know, the majority shareholder of. So the only guy that would be able to potentially rattle heads at Celtic Park is, to all intents and purposes, AWOL. Don't think he gives a shit. He's not in the slightest concerned about what's going on. And I'm pretty sure his instructions back to the guys in the boardroom have been, oh yeah, just keep doing what you're doing. They're not, you know, they can protest all they want. We're not going to change anything. And that may seem disheartening to a degree. I'm disheartened by it, but it doesn't change the fact that we need to keep the momentum, and we need to keep the protests going, and we need to make life as uncomfortable as we possibly can for these guys. And it goes back to what you said earlier on about Callum McGregor and other players. Like, this has to be feeding down to them. It has to be. They have to. The negative feeling that's coming from the top is feeding down into the team, and you can see that. And it's affecting, obviously, all of the players know that the manager is leaving. They would probably, as professionals, want to remain, you know, under his stewardship. You know, they would probably want him to stay there, and they'd want him to remain the manager. But the problem is now they're caught between a rock and a hard place. They're in two minds. Well, he's not going to be here. What does the future hold for us? You then have the shit show with Maeda, and to a lesser extent, Yang. You got to take into account that Yang was very much in a similar position to Maeda. Obviously, he wouldn't have been going for his big money, but he was fucked around as well, an awful lot. And we had that fiasco where Michael Nicholson wouldn't even answer the phone to the guys at Birmingham City. You know, he kept ignoring their calls because they wanted to tie up the deal for Yang, and the best thing to do was ignore it and it would go away, which seems to be Michael Nicholson's MO for everything. Just ignore it and it'll go away. Oh, look at that fan protest. Oh, they'll just stay staring at my phone. I'll ignore it. It'll go away. Bury my head in the sand. That's all this guy does. And, you know, nobody in the boardroom is showing any level of credibility at the moment. They're just not credible people to run our club. We all know that. That's the reason we're doing all these protests. But the problem is, we all knew when this started. We were all aware when this started that it was going to be a long, hard slog. And we're just going to have to get a hell of a lot more creative in the way that we approach this. A hell of a lot more creative. 12-minute silences and further silences in the games coming up. Silence is actually, to these guys, it's music to their ears. You know, wouldn't you think it'd be much harder for them to listen to 60,000 fans roaring at them? Get to fuck. That, to me, would be a hell of a lot more effective than silence. But that's just my opinion at the end of the day. And that's why I feel the guys in the, you know, the guys organizing the process need to get a bit more creative. They've tried this one. We'll see how it goes. We'll know how it will have went by this time next week when we're talking about it. But we really, really need to get creative in terms of how we're going to approach this, because these guys are not going to be easy to get out of there. It's going to be a long, hard slog, and we are going to have to take some pain. We all said it before it started. We were going to have to take some pain in this process. We are now starting to see what that pain is. We're talking about it. We're talking about Callum McGregor. We're talking about Brendan Rodgers. We're talking about Yang. We're talking about Maeda. These are all the effects of that. And these are all the end result of a board that doesn't have a, all these scenarios are the end result of a board that doesn't have a clue what it's doing. And yes, we're putting up banners saying that their silence is deafening. It is absolutely deafening, but our silence should not be deafening. Our noise should be cacophonous. It should be deafening to them when they're in the stadium. We should be making life hell for them, and vocally making life hell for them, and making it as uncomfortable as possible. They'll happily sit through silences, because that's, you know, see no evil, hear no evil, speak no evil. So for me, we just need to up the ante on this after this weekend next. We have an international break after that, do we?
Yes, yes. After the Motherwell game, the next game is Dundee away. I think that's October the 19th. But now that you mention our golf-loving majority, major shareholder, not majority shareholder, the man with 35% of Celtic shares, but due to the number of dormant shares, he's probably got a fair bit more say than the 35% he does actually own. This weekend, I suspect he might be in Scotland, not to watch Celtic, of course, but it's I'm very certain it's the Dunhill Cup. I checked out a couple of weeks ago, and I'm sure it was the first weekend in October. So last year, one of our non-executive directors, someone with a fair bit of influence, took part, and he actually won the Pro-Am at St Andrews. So if there's any Celtic supporters through St Andrews or thereabouts, if you want to pop along to the Old Course over this weekend, you might get a sighting of the elusive Dermot Desmond. See what his real passion and interest is in life on the fairways. Let's hope it's battering down. I hope it's pouring of rain in St Andrews over the weekend. Give him a taste of things. But there's not too much more to be said. We can only hope that the direction of the collective remains going forward, heading in the right direction. They've got an awful lot to do. Steadfast, yep. It's going to be a long battle. And for ourselves, I think we're at 1,850 subscribers. So we are rattling towards the 2,000 mark. So if you've liked us, or if you don't like us, please click on subscribe. You click on subscribe and then click on the bell. That'll give you a notification. But we're here, generally the three of us, every Monday at 6:30. What's the numbers been like tonight, Eric, for the live show? Just the two of us?
Up around the 160, not too bad. You know, it's not too shabby for two guys talking shite for an hour. I shouldn't be putting us down, but you know, I think we've admirably managed to keep it going.
Yeah, so James will be back with us next week. We'll be back to full strength, the three of us. So if you can, those that have watched it live, if you can add a comment, a thumbs up when it goes up on YouTube, that'd be appreciated. And we've no idea what we'll be talking about next week. It could be two fantastic Celtic performances, or it might not be. And we'll get an update on how Dermot Desmond got on at the Pro-Am at the Dunhill Cup, if he makes it over there. So that's all for this week. Thanks for tuning in. Thanks for most of your comments, not all of them, most of them. And I thought we were getting a third guest coming in there belatedly with the last minute winner.
I think I had an internet blackout. So it seems to be back and flying again.
Right, that seems like a good time to wind up. I'll leave it for now. And
all right, Joe.
You'll have the benefit of James digging into his vast knowledge of politics, history, and anything else this time next week. Cheers.
Okay, talk to you then, Joe. We'll have a good one between now and then. We'll discuss all of the points that we brought up tonight and see how things pan out. Talk then.